Hi, this is Kevin Clark. I'm chief correspondent and senior editor here at America Media. Today I'm speaking with Bishop Dennis Madden. Bishop Madden is an auxiliary bishop in Baltimore. He is also the former chair and a current committee member of the Bishop's Committee for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs. Previously, he has served as associate secretary general for the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, and before that, he was the director of the Pontifical Mission for Palestine, the office in Jerusalem. So, Bishop Madden, you seem to have a fairly lengthy experience working with people from diverse faiths, particularly in the interest of this conversation, people from the Islamic faith community.
I do. I was fortunate enough to live at a place called Tantur in Jerusalem. It's an ecumenical interreligious center in Jerusalem. It's owned by the Vatican, and it's highly supported by the University of Notre Dame. And during that time, I lived there for 9 years. I worked in the refugee camps in the West Bank and Gaza. And then later on, I worked out of the New York office of the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, which is this Vatican agency. And I was responsible for the Middle East, all the countries there, Jordan and Iraq and Lebanon and so I spent a lot of time with Muslims.
And you were there during a time of a general peace. I mean, 1996 to 2005, before the Arab Spring sort of disorder erupted a few years after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So your experience of Muslim people has generally been what, a very positive experience?
It has been a positive experience. And I guess, you know, one of the things that I like all communities and all groups, you have people at all ends of the spectrum, and you know, some are very, very, very good and inspiring people, and some are not so inspiring. But one of the things that I learned, especially when working in the refugee camps, were a lot of the qualities of these people. One of the big ones that stands out in my mind is the quality of their hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of the guest, the place of the guest, and their sincerity in what they were doing. It was not just a formality or some kind of a cultural practice, but it was a sincere part of what their life is like.
Yeah, but recently, most Americans appreciate the Muslim faith, unfortunately, by what they've learned over the internet following incidents like the Paris attacks conducted by ISIS, or the ISIS-inspired attack, apparently, in San Bernardino, California, recently. So a lot of people seem very alarmed by these attacks, naturally. And they've responded in a variety of ways. Can we talk about what you would view to be a positive way, perhaps, to respond to these kinds of incidents?
I think that, you know, one of the things is to try to be able to step back and to not fall into that trap of making these gross generalizations. I mean, we could do that any way we want. We could say all Catholics or all Irish, all Italians, and then just move ahead with that. I think to be able to say that, yes, this is a distinct group of people who are violent, who are extremists, who are doing barbaric things, and not to shy away from those kinds of things, but not to paint a whole society, a whole group, a whole religion, a whole faith, to condemn them as being responsible for these things. I think that it's important to realize that they do not represent the majority, that they do represent a select group of people. And for that matter, you know, we're finding out, unfortunately, in Europe and here in San Bernardino, there's Americans. These are American citizens. You know, they come from an Arab background. Some don't come from an Arab background, who somehow get caught up in this false practice of what these people are trying to promote as the, you know, sincerity or the real strict observance of the Quran. So I think that the first thing would be not to fall into that trap. I think that's not helpful for anyone.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of the most militant members of ISIS are not Arabs.
Right,
they're coming from some of the Caucasus, some of the conflict zones with the former Soviet Union.
That's right. That's right.
So what do you make of something like we've heard from the presidential candidate Donald Trump, who has suggested that it would be his policy as president to simply bar all Muslims from even entering the United States?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just when someone makes a statement like that, anyone at all, and let alone someone who's seeking the highest office in our country, you have to say that, you know, this is just, at best, you could say it's a knee-jerk response.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think it is. I think that it's worse than that. I think that one of the things is, first of all, as I said before, you can't condemn a whole faith, a whole religion, but that's wrong. I know that when I lived in the in Israel and worked in the West Bank in Gaza, and when there were times when the Palestinians who felt occupied and very oppressed, and there was a group, militant groups, you look at Hamas, and then you look up at Hezbollah up in Lebanon, and you look at these people, and one of the ways they would recruit people is that they would try to point out to these young people who were sort of disenfranchised, and they would say, they look at, you know, these, the West and these people, they have no use for you. This is a prime example. See the way they treat you in these refugee camps and all this kind of business. And this thing of barring all Muslims from entrance into our country, this would fit into that category. And as a result, what I saw in some of these refugee camps, then you would have a few people, you might call, in our language, you might call them lost souls or something. They want to become martyrs, and then they would be a martyr. Those are the folks who would strap bombs to themselves and these kind of things.
Yeah.
Because they felt hopeless and that they're this, you know, the West has no use for them. So I think that to make this kind of statement, even if you were seriously trying to protect the country, what you do is you put the country at greater risk. It's just it's wrong and it makes no sense. And it's just, you know, we're pretty tight on admitting people to our country. There's a process that people go through. There's a lot of vetting. Someone that does not show up at the airport with a passport from Syria or something and comes in. So
yeah, it seems like the refugee crisis might be the greatest, responding to the refugee crisis, I should say, might be the greatest casualty in this sort of political rhetoric, because the people fleeing ISIS are now being kind of generalized, as you say, with the ISIS terrorism.
It is. It's so terribly wrong, because the refugees, and you see these people, I mean, you know, you see like that little baby, you know, washed up on the shore, all these kinds of things. They now are victimized by these ISIS, that they now are being denied admission to a country because of what ISIS is doing. So it's they're going through now another form of harassment and torture.
And if any of these folks that are landing in Europe, as you mentioned, the American process for getting U.S. asylum is pretty lengthy and difficult. I believe it's the average time is 18 to 24 months.
It is. It is an average time of 18 to 24 months. That's the usual time. And I wouldn't be surprised now that out of fear that it might not even be extended more. And in the meantime, people are held, you know, in kind of a limbo. They're not neither here nor there. And that's a terrible time. We have to begin to appreciate, you know, it's this idea is the stranger among us, as the bishop's document from some time back stated. You know, we have people here, and they have a basic right is a right to a country, is a right to a home, and we should not deny them that. I think our Holy Father Francis has shown us a way of learning how to receive the stranger and learning how to receive the refugee. You know, even that's, it's a symbolic, but at least the receiving of two families into the Vatican just kind of set the tone to say the way he thinks things should go.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very tough row to hoe to get to through this process. I believe there's probably still Iraqi Christians who have been on refugee resettlement lists since the 2003 invasion of Iraq.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things, again, about living in the Holy Land, which is so funny, you know, that there were Palestinians there whose families would go back, hundreds and hundreds of years, and when friends would come over to visit there, they would ask to say, well, how long have you been a Catholic, or how long have you been a Christian? They thought they were just converted or something. They didn't realize that
they were like the original Christian community.
That's right. And their family goes way, way back.
Yeah. So do you think the 10,000 that the president has agreed to accept, that has frankly alarmed a lot of people, do you think that number is sufficient, dangerous, or do you think it needs to be higher?
I don't think it's dangerous, and I think that if it were, I think, and I don't know what the, I'm not a politically wise in that sense, but I think that if it serves as a beginning to make sure that at least we can take 10,000 in, as opposed to taking none in, then I would say, we should go with it. But I think it's extremely low. If you look at some of the, you look at Germany and other countries, what they're doing and what they have done, it's a very low number. And if you add on top of that, taking 18 to 24 months to vet people, it is indeed probably the least you could do in reasonableness. When you say taking in 10,000, that's after they've been vetted and they've gone through this process. So that is a very, it's not like we saw on the news of people going across the borders and being welcomed as they were in Germany with flowers and food and clothing. So it's far from that.
Yeah, it'll be a much more technical and bureaucratic process.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Now, the church has responded in recent statements from Archbishop Kurtz and Bishop Vigneron in Detroit, pushing back against sort of like nascent Muslim bigotry after San Bernardino and after Paris. Do you think that's sufficient? Do you think the church needs to do more to reach the Catholic community, reassure them, and point out, frankly, what the church teaches on such issues?
Well, I think that that's the Bishop's Committee on Ecumenical Interreligious Affairs tries to do a good job in all of this, and I think that the current chair, Bishop Mitchell Rosansky, is a good dear friend. He comes from Baltimore as well, is trying to really help educate people about what is Islam all about, and help people be more comfortable in talking with Muslims and seeing Muslims as they are. They're human beings. They're good people, and I'm in the process of assisting with. We're going to try and have some dialogues. I think that it would be helpful during this time that the various dioceses around the country would avail themselves of some of the materials that come out of this committee, some of the statements that have been made, some of the other materials that help educate people. And I think that would be something that would be much needed, because otherwise you build up this narrative. And once that, it's like a soundbite, it might not be true, but it's repeated over and over again, and people begin to believe it.
That soundbite would be what? That Islam is a religion of violence? I mean, we hear that a lot from the people suggesting that it's naive to treat Muslims as peaceful Americans or would-be immigrants, that the faith is propelling a level of violence. Is that the kind of thing you'd like to counteract?
Yes, exactly, exactly that. So it's, if we look at our own history, look at our own, we are a Christian nation, but we did drop a bomb or two on, in Japan and all over, and did different things that are very, very much unchristian.
Would you say there's a parallel to what Catholics experienced in the 19th century to what would-be Muslim immigrants to the United States now might be experiencing?
I think I don't know. To now, I think it's a little bit worse now, because I think that nowadays they're really viewed in a sense as terrorists. You can't, almost in a sense, you can't turn your back on them, and they're just here, and they'll be really. You'll always be at risk with them in your. So I think it's even a little bit worse now. And what happens is then when you have these various events, these god-awful events that take place, like in Paris and in our own country, and then people really feel that, oh, they must be true. See, they are. This thing happened.
Mm-hmm. Forgetting that the acts of 6 or 7 people, or even 1,000 people, that compares to, I believe there's, what, 1.5 billion Muslims in the world?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the whole thing. You know, whenever you do that, you know, the church has gone through it. We've gone through a terrible time. You know, let's just be very frank about it. Talk about the sex abuse crisis in the church. Well, you know, there was a time when, you know, as a priest, when all those things were breaking loose, that you felt a little bit uncomfortable. I remember going through some cities like that, even, you know, with all these things, and you have your collar on, and you feel people are staring at you or something like that, because of this very, very small number of priests who had engaged in this terrible, terrible thing of abusing children. And you know, because you are a priest, so, you know, then you automatically have to be part of that group. And you share some of what the Muslims are feeling today, that, you know, you're a Muslim, or you wear that headdress, so you must be like one of those terrorists. I mean, it's a terrible feeling to have, and no one wants to feel that way.
And do you think that Catholics have a special duty or call to respond to combat that?
I think we do. I think we do, in a sense that I think it's part of our DNA. It's part of our nature. And I think during this year of mercy that we should be especially sensitive to this. And the thing about it is, like Pope Francis has so emphasized, starting off with our realization of God's love for us, God's mercy towards us. And if we really could appreciate that, I think we'd be a bit more generous in being merciful and loving to others. Well, I think we as Catholics, it's part of our heritage. You know, we have a sacrament of reconciliation, one of our sacraments. And so it's part of who we are as Catholics. We do this. We don't hold grudges. We don't, you know, lock up people because to make sure that nothing happens. So we'll all be safe, you know, and this kind of thing. So, yeah, I think we're well equipped for it.
All right. Well, on that positive and merciful note, I'm going to thank Bishop Madden for spending some time with us this afternoon. I'm going to thank you for visiting us here at americamedia.org. Have a blessed and wonderful Christmas season. And Bishop Madden, thanks very much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Kevin. Thanks very much for inviting me to talk with you.